You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and this episode is part two in the Dark Web series that I started last week. In the first episode, I did a primer. What is the dark web? What kind of things can you find on it? How do you get on it? What are some of the things that it's utilized for outside of drugs and child pornography? I even did a very basic tutorial on how you can access it. So for this one, I'm going to be carrying on getting a little bit more technical and then covering some of the really, really, really dark parts of the dark web. So I never, ever, ever, ever do this, but big time content and trigger warning, we are going to be talking about a wide variety of really heinous topics. So before I get into that, let's just get our quick housekeeping out of the way. You can find the show at WeSawTheDevil.com. From there, you can listen to episodes, find all of our social media handles, which, surprise, are WeSawTheDevil across everything, more or less. If you want to suggest a case, whether it's cold, unsolved, solved, suggest any sort of show topic like dark web, anything like that, you can send us an email to info@wesawthedevil.com. Also, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/wesawthedevil, where as little as $3 a month, you can financially back the show and get some goodies while doing it. All of May's postcards have now been sent out. So basically what that entails is I pick a random location somewhere in the world, buy postcards for that location, and then send them out to our patrons. They get the postcards, and then typically after most people have received them, we will go ahead and do a surprise Patreon-only episode for that location. It's a lot of fun, but yes, be on the lookout for those postcards. They have now all gone out. Furthermore, if you're liking the show, loving the show, please consider taking just a couple moments and titty slapping that subscribe button, as well as leaving a 5-star review. There is nothing more helpful that you can do to support your favorite podcast. And not just my podcast, guys. If you guys listen to other podcasts, which I know you do, please take a minute and leave them a 5-star review to let them know that you're enjoying it. And I never in a million years thought that I would have to address this, but really quickly, last week I got a 1-star review and the person claimed, you may have seen it on Facebook and Twitter because I posted it. I was laughing so hard of someone claiming that titty slap, it means that I'm endorsing violence against women. I can't even believe that I'm doing this, but I would like to address that and say that no. That is reaching. Like, are you a yoga instructor? Because wow, what a stretch. No violence against women. No one is slapping a titty on this show. It is literally just an inside kind of joke of, you know, just imagining, because, you know, most of our listeners, I see your demographics. It's like 87% women picking up your boob and slamming it down on a subscribe button or whatever. It's just a funny visual. I don't know. Okay. I'm not advocating physical assault of women. I just felt like I needed to clear the air there. Really quickly, up next on the dockets, Brittany will be joining me again this week. We are going to tackle some Lori Vallow stuff. So we're going to do an update on the news from last week that we didn't cover. We have some crow to eat and, you know, we got to remove our feet from our mouths because we were wrong, incredibly wrong, on our speculation that we had last week. So we need to talk about that. And then we're going to do some deep dives on certain cast of characters. Thor, David Warwick, Melanie Gibb, and we're going to start going over some of the other key players. Super excited to have Brittany join me again. She's hilarious. But first, we are going to finish up the Dark Web Part 2. Now, since we're moving on, let's just get a little bit more technical, especially since a handful of you reached out stating your intent to go on the Dark Web. Now, it is worth noting now that Tor browser is not completely secure. Tor itself is the encryption program used to access the dark web. That's just the access, like the program that allows you to access it. Tor browser is the browser created by Tor. Now, most people use both while accessing the dark web, but it isn't enough. And on top of this, you may want to download and set up your own VPN, because really, there can never, ever, ever be enough security while doing this, and I cannot express that enough. Let's say you have all of this and you're ready to go. What's next? Cybersecurity firms recommend that you first take a few extra steps. I personally would recommend getting a secondary computer as a whole. Then you don't have to make sure that your main computer's, you know, virus protection is fully updated, your operating system is fully updated. And I mean, if you're like me, and I guess I'll just go ahead and admit this, I'm lazy as fuck. I have all of my passwords and like credit card, like autofill stuff on my primary PC. And yeah, I could not in a million years and would not. You cannot pay me enough money to access the dark web for my main computer. So beyond, if you can't use a secondary computer and you're going to use your primary one, close every single program and process that you will not need or use. A lot of those can have vulnerabilities or cause like a little like tunnel into your computer. Now, some people even go the extra mile and install a virtual machine on their computer. It's highly recommended to add a program like Tails, which basically further hides your IP address. Tails is like a disposable operating system. By plugging in a USB drive, you can actually boot your computer up off of it, basically isolating access to your PC to that one external drive outside of your computer, if that makes sense. So it keeps your primary computer safe and out of harm's way. So if you're interested in exploring the dark web, learn and use PGP encryption. That is the number one recommendation I'm seeing from a lot of different cybersecurity people. But overall, guys, use common sense. I know it's a very unpopular opinion, and I'm going to say something really shocking and controversial. You know, I know it's 2021, and I'm the black sheep of my friends group with this opinion. But even if you think you've made a friend online, and you very well may have. Hell, I've made a lot of friends online that I love dearly that I talk to on a daily basis. But keep in mind that you don't actually know them until you meet them in real life. And why is this level of paranoia necessary? Allow me to literally ruin your life. Imagine that it's 3 a.m. You and your husband or wife are sleeping soundly in bed, and suddenly you're slowly pulled awake by a noise. You start to register it, and it sounds like murmured talking. You jolt awake and you tap your partner. Do you hear that? Is someone in the house? Was a TV left on? As the two of you creep down the hallway, it gets louder. You clearly begin to hear a man's voice followed by your child's. The talking is coming from your 3-year-old child's bedroom. A rush of emotions go through you as you immediately think someone is in your home, and your brain covers every worst case scenario in just a millisecond. As you open the door, your baby is standing up in its bed, but no one is there. You look around, check the closets, and then a disembodied man's voice says, "Hello." This has happened to hundreds of people across the country. And what is it? Their Ring doorbell was hacked. In 2019, there were two major hacks of Amazon's Ring doorbell. The leaked data, which included usernames, passwords, camera names, time zones, home plans, and layouts, were in a standardized format suggesting that a hack had taken place and poached it directly from a company database. Using the login email and password, an intruder could access a Ring customer's home address, telephone number, and payment information. Not only that, but they could also access all live camera footage from all active Ring cameras associated with an account, as well as a 30 to 60 day history, depending on that user's cloud storage plan. Were you naked at any point? Were you having sex, taking a shower, bathing, or changing your child? Some creep from the dark web could have been watching you in real time and switching cameras throughout your house. In 2019, the two hacks gave details on 3,672 and 1,600 Ring doorbell credentials. That's 5,275 Ring doorbell customers in the United States. And the creepy part is that Ring chose not to notify its customers of the hacks when they discovered it. That's right. That means that if you were a victim of this hack, that you would never have known. You wouldn't have gotten a heads up about taking the precautionary actions of changing your password or payment information or getting rid of it altogether to expel any sort of hacker who may be watching your family. One Black family from Mississippi was in the kitchen cooking when suddenly they heard a man's voice begin to berate them with racial slurs. One single woman came home for work and was watching TV in her living room when a booming voice came out of nowhere calling her by her name and telling her that she should smile more. And guys, here's the thing. The vast majority of these passwords were obtained by a major hack of a database that hosts Ring data. But some people have also been hacked by reportedly accessing the dark web with low levels of protection, as their IP addresses and Wi-Fi networks are easily accessed. So if those particular scenarios would keep you up at night, then make sure to take the extra steps and don't slouch with your personal security. So for this episode, I want to go into a little more detail. We're going to go over the various levels of the dark web according to how disturbing I find them to be. A few items like red rooms, hurtcore, and various other things we will spend a little bit more time on. So let's go through the different levels of the dark web based on how disturbing I find them. Let's start with level one, the ground level here. You have like Silk Road 1 and 2, the Black Market Reloaded, all of the drug-centric marketplaces. And again, almost every type of drug on the planet is available on these websites, along with poisons, guns, chat forums. It's literally a living, breathing economy and business. There are even people who, quote, secret shopper these drug markets. You know, like people who go into big box retail stores and they buy something and then they discuss their customer service experience and overall how well it went. Well, the same thing on the dark web. They have people who buy a product from one of the drug markets and then conduct actual purity tests on that drug. They post the chemistry results and then just sort of an overall experience with that seller. It's like a drug marketplace Yelp, and I don't know why, but I find it hilarious. I can only imagine someone sitting there being like, yep, it ain't much, but it's honest work. And again, on these websites, you can find insulin, pain medication, and real actual pharmaceuticals. And as everyone knows, I recently lost both of my parents to COVID-19. And my mom was extra susceptible because she had a compromised immune system due to rheumatoid arthritis. She worked in the healthcare industry and went through a variety of medical trials in an attempt to keep her rheumatoid in remission. And one of those medications actually basically killed her liver. It put her into liver failure. One of the newer medications that she needed to survive wasn't covered by her insurance, because obviously, God bless the American healthcare industry. About 4 months before she passed away, I was helping her order it from Mexico and getting it shipped to her house. Had I bought it out of pocket here in the United States, it would have been almost $2,000 a month. And that's for the bare minimum that she needed. It would have been almost like $3,000 had she gotten all the pills that she needed. When we got it from Mexico, it was just $1,200 per month. Now, if she had obtained it from the dark web, it would have been about $50 per month. And I will fully and publicly admit that I logged on to check to see if it was available, you know, desperate to try to make sure that my mom didn't die and that she got the medication that she needed to keep her alive. Obviously, I never ordered it from the dark web and I have never ordered drugs from the dark web, but I was curious and it was in fact there. And many Americans actually turned there for insulin, EpiPens, and other pharmaceutical drugs that they can't get it. Because again, our healthcare fucking sucks here. And especially in cases of life or death, can you blame them? And then we have hitman services. These are really freaky, and half of them are actually like false or hoaxes, but there are some real ones, guys. For as little as $5,000, you can find a hitman for sale, like their service, and different websites have different rules on this. One site has a condition that people under 16 years of age and younger, as well as top politicians, are excluded, so no luck there. There's another website that claims that if a customer raises enough capital, they would be willing to kill any government official in any country in the world. Most likely, that's bullshit and it's just a hoax and they want to steal your Bitcoin. The most interesting story to me, and I have a huge book recommendation for you guys. I mean, it is one of the best books I've ever read. There was a notorious mafia-related hitman website that actually has many confirmed kills. And I'm not going to mention its name on this podcast as it's still active, but I will say that it's out of Albania. And if you're interested, I highly suggest you read a book by a woman named Eileen Ormsby. It's called Darkest Web: Drugs, Death, and Destroyed Lives, the inside story of the internet's evil twin. Eileen is a lawyer and journalist based out of Melbourne, Australia, and she's incredible. She's fearless, and she spent 5 years researching every single nook, cranny, and crevice of the dark web. She began to research one particular mafia site on the dark web that offered hitmen for hire. She wasn't sure if they were real, but then a hacker who was trying to take down the site contacted her directly, and they were able to give her access to the back end of the hitman site. I mean, it gave her full access. She could see all of their messages, internal communications, the whole bit. She got access to the private messages to clients and people hiring them for hits, and she began to see money being exchanged and the names of potential targets. So she began to cross-reference and check the names of the targets in world news based on where they were located. And she was able to, in fact, verify in real-life news that these people were, in fact, being murdered. Well, the owner and the head hitman discovered the security breach, and he brought in his own hacker to reverse stalk her, and they found her IP address. Upon discovering her, the mafia and the hitman, they didn't take it well. They didn't take it well at all. And she mentioned that they sent over 15 emails in just as many hours. They threatened to rape and kill her. They sent her emails with attached viruses and malware. They even planted a lot of child pornography on her home computer. They sent her photographs of her own house. And that's one of the most terrifying stories from the dark web to me, and it's like my most absolute worst nightmare. Can you imagine accessing the dark web, which is rife with pedophiles and criminals and drug lords? Don't forget, in part one, I discussed that the Hell's Angels in Canada are hugely on the dark web as far as like drug running and drug smuggling, buying it from the dark web. It's terrifying. Like, that is my worst nightmare. And then for one of them from that, you know, that kind of like dregs of society, sending you a picture of your own home, knowing where you live. Like, I cannot even. First of all, buy her book. But secondly, spoiler alert, if you're curious as to how that situation ended up, she just began talking to him. In all of her time on the dark web, she was completely honest and forthright about who she was and why she was there. She promised to never attempt to divulge anyone's actual identity, and in this case, the big scary mafia man actually ended up striking kind of a weird friendship with her. He even offered her a job translating a few of his dark websites into English. As you can imagine, she did not accept the offer, but she did learn a lot. And then also in her book, she traveled. She never actually accessed child pornography. I mean, a lot of people, when they think of, you know, researchers and things like that on the dark web, they're like, oh my God, they must see a lot. Well, she actually expressly did not go to any of the child porn or those types of websites. She actually went to the trials. She worked with police and went to the actual trials and sat in on the trials, including Ross Ulbricht from Silk Roads, so she could gather information there. But read her book. She has a series on it, and they're so good. Again, that's Eileen Ormsby, and this particular book is called Darkest Web: Drugs, Death, and Destroyed Lives, the inside story of the internet's evil twin. Amazing book, 5 stars. One of my absolute favorite parts of the dark web, and it's actually just, I find it hilarious, is the fact that you can find so much random crap on it. You can find everything from collectible newspapers from the 1930s, like original newspapers announcing World War II, like real actual collector's items. You can find like retro appliance manuals, Audubon books from the 1950s, collectible books. But you can also find coupons. And I mean, yes, those coupons, like the kind you get out of the newspaper. Beauregard Wittigny, a Louisiana-based technician for ITT Technical Institute, was caught selling coupons for literally everything imaginable. He is being accused of being an online coupon kingpin, which, what a hell of a resume. And he went by the names Purple Lotus or the Golden Lotus. And he used dark web marketplaces like Silk Road and Silk Road 2 to sell his products. He would sell coupons, but he would also sell how-to kits for $25 that would basically show you how to create and print off your own fake coupons. He is said to have cost big box retail stores over $2 million from these fake coupons. Also, we have on our level one, all the stolen data, right? The stolen credit cards, passports, hacked data, like the list of Ashley Madison website users and adult friend finder users that I discussed, Josh Duggar episode update. And hackers, obviously you can get hackers, hackers who will hack anything, anyone, and have no moral compass typically whatsoever. Then you have chat rooms and forums. And there are many forums on the dark web that are just for chatting, nothing nefarious, nothing sinister. They discuss everything from poetry, philosophy, to everything in between. One of the fun forums is where people literally just trip on acid or psychedelics, and then they just come together to share their thoughts and musings while high. I mean, that's literally the entire point of it. And then you have the food vendors, because there's nothing more safe than buying food off the dark web. You had one German man who was notorious for selling pretzels, and he had a 5-star rating and thousands of purchases. And then you had another man who just sold carrots. I mean, that type of like random joke, you know, satire, they had all of that. But then they have other cool parts like the Radical Militant Library. And it's really, really cool. Their website reads, quote, "We are the Radical Militant Librarians. These are our books. We will accept no barriers between readers and our books. We will never register who borrows what and when. All books are welcome in our library." And you can find so many different kinds of books, all available for free, but you must download them at your own discretion. And you can also post your own books as well to share. And so it's stuff like this, when you look through the lens of people living in North Korea, China, Iran, Syria, places like that, where they don't have access to Amazon, Audible, anything like that, right? And here they are, they can, you know, access the dark web and read Harry Potter. They can read different history books. They have access via the dark web to all of these different schools of thought and cultures at their fingertips. So let's move on to level two. A little bit creepier here. The first is last words. There are some websites on the dark web in which one can hear the last communications and spoken words of people who died. So like crashed airplanes from the black box and the communications, the last words of prisoners before they are executed. And it is pretty creepy, but these have all been verified and are cataloged by manner of death. And it's just, you know, it's something available if you want to hear the very last words that people have spoken. And then you have summoning demons. There's a bunch of different websites on there explaining how to summon demons, do magic rituals, and how to bring back the old and new demons into the physical world, which it's ridiculous. And then we have the cannibal forums. And I don't know if you guys recall, I previously did an episode on Armin Mivus. He was a cannibal from Germany who had a desire to consume someone. So he found a willing victim. They met up. The victim ended up dying. He basically killed him, even though he was willing, and then butchered him like an animal and then ate him. So that was actually on the surface web. The Cannibal Cafe was on the surface web, and you could just access it anytime you felt like it. A lot of that has gone underground. A lot of that has gone on the dark web as well. And on these websites online on the dark web, you can find other cyber cannibals discussing their deepest and darkest fantasies. They talk about how they feel while eating a man or a woman. They discuss methods of how to obtain victims. They even share recipes. There's one website dedicated to even showing how to cook women and which parts of them taste the best, supposedly from experience. They even make full instructional infographics on how to dismember the bodies. And one particular graphic on a page shows how to cook people in a pot and which temperature and how to cook them to keep them alive and suffering the longest. Back in 2018, 23-year-old Alexander Nathan Barter logged onto the dark web and began to chat on one of these cannibal sites. He believed that he was talking to a 13-year-old girl, because of course that would make sense, a 13-year-old girl on the dark web, right? But regardless, he made plans to meet her. Just to talk, he said. So on the right day, he traveled to their meeting spot and instead came face to face with FBI agents. And he tried to, you know, obviously, I mean, we've all seen To Catch a Predator, take your seat. And they always say, no, I'm just here to talk. Well, he pulled the same bullshit. And that was proven to be a lie because he was in possession of a butcher knife and a trash bag. The U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Texas even gave him the moniker the Dark Web Cannibal. And another large piece. So I'm about to say something that is probably going to make a lot of people angry. And that's okay. Necrophilia in the funeral industry is far more prevalent and common than you think. Necrophilia isn't just about people going out and digging up bodies out of a graveyard to have their way with them. What better way to get the easiest access of all than to work at a funeral home? There are a series of websites that publish pictures of people in coffins, the morgue, and directly on the autopsy table. We all have a worst thing we've ever seen on the internet story, right? Well, here is one of mine. There used to be a necrophilia subreddit somewhere 8 to 10 years ago or so before it was removed and banned. And as someone who is quite curious by nature, I decided to try to find the worst possible things on Reddit. I mean within reason, right? Like not looking up anything illegal, anything like that. So I saw the necrophilia subreddit listed as some suggested link on the side, so I clicked it. And almost every post was from someone who worked in the funeral industry. It was obviously a meeting place for autopsy technicians, funeral home employees, and they were sharing and discussing various methods of how they sexually abused or sexually like looked at and observed the corpses that came through. It included pictures, guys. It included actual pictures as brags. Every sexuality and every gender was represented here. But the worst thing I witnessed was from someone who posted a picture. It was of a man holding his penis up against the vaginal opening of a woman who had clearly just had an autopsy performed on her. I almost vomited. And that, kiddies, is why you never go searching for like the worst things ever or anything taboo. You almost always get more than you bargain for. It was disgusting. It will haunt me until the day that I die. If you are completely and utterly disgusted by this, as you should be, I highly suggest you read about Karen Greenlee. And the info that I'm about to tell you is, I'm not even going to lie, it's directly stolen from Wikipedia. So don't go ape on me. I am 100% just going to Wikipedia to read this off. Karen Greenlee worked as an apprentice embalmer at Memorial Lawn Mortuary in Sacramento, California. In December of 1979, she stole the Cadillac hearse that she was driving to a funeral, along with the body of a 33-year-old man who had died the week prior. Apparently, she drove the hearse to the funeral as it was intended, and then she saw the man's family. She did a huge dramatic donut and then took off. She was found days later near Eleni in Sierra County. She was found almost dead. She had attempted to commit suicide by overdosing on 20 pills of Tylenol and codeine, but she lived. She survived. She was found with a 4.5-page-long written confession where she admitted to having had sex with 20 to 40 dead bodies of young men, calling it addiction. Now, necrophilia was not actually illegal in California at this time. So the charges against her weren't for, say, like abuse of a corpse or anything like that. It was for stealing the damn hearse. It was for stealing the hearse and interfering with a funeral. So for those two items, she pleaded guilty and was sentenced to pay $255 as a fine and spend 11 days in jail. So after she was released, her probation included mandatory therapy, which she claims actually helped her make peace with herself. Now, the mortuary in the funeral home was actually sued by the man's family for $1 million. They lost because the Superior Court judge basically said, nah, well, this doesn't really have a lasting impact on the family, so no, not for $1 million. They did, however, eventually settle this out of court for roughly $117,000 in general and punitive damages. Now, here's where it gets good. Now, 8 years later, Karen Greenlee gave a very detailed and graphic interview to a man named Jim Morton for his book, Apocalypse Culture. It was kind of like an underground book and just interviewing different types of people. He asked her directly about all of this. And she was very, very, very honest. She calls herself an unrepentant necrophile. And here are the few of the statements that she made. that her family is pretty much destroyed over it. One of her brothers isn't comfortable being around her, but the other one was like, how do you do it? Jim Morton asks her directly, how do you sexually interact with a corpse? And her response was, quote, people have this misconception that there has to be penetration for sexual gratification, which is bull. The most sensitive part of a woman is the front area anyway, and that is what needs to be stimulated. Besides, there are different aspects of sexual expression. Touchy-feely, 69, even holding hands. That body is just laying there, but it has what it takes to make me happy. The cold, the aura of death, the smell of death, the funeral surroundings, it all contributes. She then goes on to talk about how she finds the odor of death erotic. She said, quote, there are death odors and there are death odors. Now you get your body that's been floating in the bay for 2 weeks or a burn victim. That doesn't attract me as much. But a freshly embalmed corpse is something else. And she goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Ending as far as why therapy didn't work for her. She says, quote, it's frustrating. For a while, I found myself thinking, yeah, this isn't normal. Why can't I be like other people? Why doesn't the same pair of shoes fit me just right? I went through all the personal hell, and finally I accepted myself and realized that's just me. That's my nature. I might as well enjoy it. I'm miserable when I try to be something I'm not. The more I talk to these people, referring to social workers and therapists, the more I realize necrophilia makes sense for me. The reason I was having a problem with it was because I couldn't accept myself. I was still trying to live my life by other people's standards. To accept it was peace. She's something else. Absolutely revolting. She described herself as a morgue rat, and she says that necrophilia is like an addiction. And she does say in graphic detail that her experience is that she met many other necrophiles, and a lot of them have gone like underground and online because they obviously can't discuss this just completely out in the open, like, hey, I'm a necrophile, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, what I learned is from her interview, as well as being on the subreddit and just kind of like taking a look around, there were pictures to prove it. Very real pictures, actually. And she says that she met a handful of other necrophiles working in the funeral industry as well, which, I mean, there aren't that many. So it is definitely, as she said, far, far, far more common. So let's get to level 4. This would be considered the most disturbing. There's a notorious website that claims that actual experiments on live humans are conducted and live streamed to users. It's called the Human Experiment. And I honestly, personally think it's a crock of bullshit. Supposedly, it lists the details on a number of experiments on homeless people that are really, really, really intricately documented. On the homepage, it says this. In this website, we attempt to illustrate several experiments that are being conducted by our group on human subjects. The people chosen for this range of experiments are usually homeless people that are unregistered citizens. What's worse is that they go into graphic detail. They say experimentations range from starvation and water fluid restriction, vivisection and pain tolerances, infectious diseases and organ effects, transfusions, drug trials, sterilizations, infant tolerances to x-rays, heat, and pressure. Laboratory examinations, like full blood counts, urinalysis, chemistries, are done at hospitals where we take the samples and send them under real patients' names. And I could go into it. They intricately have journals. So like one is 17-year-old female, no past known medical history, impregnated by subject 0521. Experiment, bleach tolerance of fetus. 5 milliliters daily into your uterus. No abortion induced yet. Anything is possible. It is the dark web, but something about this just completely screams hoax to me as a whole. It was listed originally on the Hidden Wiki, which is, as I said in the first episode, like a phone book for the dark web. That's how it actually gained notoriety, was screenshots. So the supposed theory, if you want to go off of this being potentially real, is that there are 4 different warehouses somewhere holding up to 20 different test subjects. And again, the only evidence of this is just a series of screenshots. That's it. And something that's even more ridiculous is that they claim that when their subjects die, which inevitably they will and do, that they dispose of the remains in butcher shop dumpsters, which it feels like something out of a really bad Hollywood movie. Then you have your animal abuse. There are a lot of animal abuse websites on the dark web, and because it destroys my soul to even think about it, we won't dwell on that too much. Think about Don't Fuck with the Cats, stuff like that. Contents like crush porn, where someone, usually a woman in high heels or some sort of platform, steps on or crushes small animals. And then you have your regular animal abuse and bestiality. So then we get to child pornography. 80% of the videos on the dark web, per Hyperion Gray, is filled with this content. And I'm going to go through a few of the more notable news items from this. Perhaps the most well-known form of child abuse on the dark web is hurtcore. And yes, that's exactly as it sounds. Hardcore physical pain is inflicted on young children and even babies. Sexual pain is not the point, but physical torture, usually followed by sexual assault. And you know it's bad when most run-of-the-mill pedophiles are just utterly disgusted and repulsed by it. The largest and most frequently visited site for this was called Hurt to the Core. So what's the story behind it? Because there have been a few massively high-profile worldwide arrests related to this website. In 2011, 18-year-old Matthew David Graham was literally in his last year of high school in Melbourne, Australia, or secondary school as it's known. He was really into World of Warcraft, computer games, and he frequently hung out on 4chan. One day, users from Anonymous announced on 4chan that they were going to do a major hack on a child porn site called Lolita City. They wanted to expose all of its users and then send them all to law enforcement for prosecution. It was a very noble effort. Now, since this was the beginning of the dark web, Anonymous provided a full tutorial of how to access it. How to download Tor browser, access the hidden wiki, how to get to various onions. Anonymous urged all hackers to join in on the attack to get the site removed and taken down. He followed Anonymous's tutorial and accessed the dark web, finding not only Lolita City, but a variety of different child porn websites. He began posting in various dark web forums under the name of Lux. He described how he had pedophilic thoughts his entire life, but was able to control them. When he discovered full and open access to child pornography sites on the dark web, that consumed him. In one interview, he said, quote, "At first I felt ashamed of myself for being attracted to such a thing, but as time went on, I slowly grew more accepting of myself. It wasn't until I came across the Tor pedo community that I was able to truly feel comfortable with attractions." And unfortunately, this bastard was able to entertain his attractions. But he realized very quickly that he was attracted to hurtcore, or physical abuse of children, and most of the sites on the dark web banned it. Again, if most pedophiles are against it, you know it's really sick, disgusting, and depraved. So what does he do? He sets up a series of child porn sites and forums himself, and he hosted it with Freedom Hosting. Now, if Freedom Hosting sounds familiar, that's because I covered it in part one of this series. Freedom Hosting became notorious because it was Tor's most popular hosting service for websites selling drugs and porn, like Silk Road. It was shut down by the FBI in 2013. So he began to host his own, and one of the biggest websites that he hosted was a site called Hurt to the Core, and it was all hurtcore pornography of children. It was a sort of forum slash message board where people could trade child pornography for free. One of the big things about child pornography that even Eileen Ormsby posts about and writes about is that people believe that you have to pay for it on the dark web or even surface web. That's not the case. A lot of it is free. The paid stuff is for the really, really bad stuff for the most part. So there was a section on his website that he allowed large-scale, more well-known child pornography producers to kind of set up shop. There were sections of the site dedicated to renting or buying orphaned children for sex across different countries. And the site actively commissioned new videos tailored for specific audiences. Lux once boasted that the site averaged 326 new accounts and around 160 posts per day, and he claimed to be getting around 15,000 video downloads daily. And discussions on Hurt to the Core revealed depravity that most people, even on the dark web itself, even the pedophiles and criminals on the dark web, never had like previously encountered or seen. There was a book that you could buy on how to produce child porn for dummies. Literally, they named it in a For Dummies title. There was a movie called Three Men and a Baby, Butchered Bitches, Youngins Bound. There was porn featuring toddlers. And one person, one massive, massive post, they needed ideas on how to blackmail teenage girls, how to blackmail them after grooming them online. Now, at this time, Graham was a first-year nanotechnology student at La Trobe University, and he was also a babysitter. He had direct access to six children that included three boys and three girls, all under the age of 10. Thankfully, though, he never touched them. And like I said a moment ago, there were notorious child porn producers on his website. Those who produced the most content were given VIP access to various parts of the website, almost like a green room, like a VIP room. And one of the most notorious videos ever made, created by one of the world's worst child predators, found its home here. Now, you may have heard that name or even recall when I asked Gina Osborne about it in one of our previous shows, where we had her on, because it is that notorious. Australian Peter Scully, along with a female accomplice, created and produced a video series called Daisy's Destruction. It's a series of four films which depicted the rape and torture of several girls, including a toddler. Now, Peter Scully would charge thousands of dollars on a pay-per-view website linked to Hurt to the Core. And that's what Graham did. Daisy's Destruction had been out for a couple of years at that point, but Graham basically allowed it to be hosted and as a pay-per-view on Hurt to the Core, and then got all of the web traffic and so on and so forth, which bolstered his porn website as well. Peter Scully would actually sell physical copies of Daisy's Destruction for tens of thousands of dollars to the elite wealthy people of the world. And he was based out of Australia at this time. He ended up fleeing Australia due to fraud charges and settled in the Philippines, which unfortunately made his line of work that much easier. He would entice children with money and gifts and then drug them and then made films of him raping and torturing them for basically international pedophile rings. Filipino police also say that Scully buried an 11-year-old girl under the floor of a house that he was renting after he made a film of him raping and strangling her to death. Especially after Daisy's Destruction, governments from dozens of countries all over the world literally went on the hunt for who produced this video. And Graham would repeatedly taunt investigators, telling them that they would never find him. And once he realized that law enforcement was closing in, he actually offered giving all of the information they wanted in exchange for Bitcoin and immunity. And then he messed up really, really bad, and he went on 4chan and stated under his 4chan name that he was in fact Lux. And that was a very dumb decision. As I've explained, 4chan is on the surface web, so yeah, every law enforcement agency in the world tapped that IP address. So Matthew David Graham was arrested in 2014, and his house was raided by forces of the Victoria State Police, FBI, Interpol, many international government agencies. He faced 13 charges, with arguably the most heinous of all being him encouraging a Russian man to rape, kidnap, and murder a child, and also the abuse of a disabled child in the UK. It's unknown if the person he was communicating with actually acted on it, but Graham encouraged him to do so. Graham was sentenced to 15 years in prison, with the judge calling him pure evil. Just 15 years. Just 15 years. Now, after Graham was arrested and Hurt to the Core was seized, other large pedophiles soon followed. Peter Scully was arrested at his home in the Philippines in February of 2015. He faced a total of 75 charges. Interestingly, though, right before his trial, a fire ripped through a Philippines police station where all of the evidence for his trial was being held, especially the worst and most key pieces. And it's been speculated multiple times that he bribed a police officer or official in order to have that happen. However, it didn't matter. He and his girlfriend were both sentenced to life in prison and consistently complain about the conditions in the prison to this day. So sad, no one cares. And the worst part about Scully is that one of the parts of Daisy's destruction is that he rapes and tortures little girls, which is bad enough, right? But there's one video in there that shows him making a young girl dig her own grave, and then it shows him murdering her after he assaults her. They did, in fact, find a girl's body under a house that he was renting, but they were unable to determine whether it was the same girl from the video. And earlier this month, here in May of 2021, German prosecutors announced that they have busted one of the world's largest international dark web platforms for child pornography. This one had over 400,000 registered users, and it was called Boys Town. Over 400,000 registered people used it to watch and share child pornography, this one mainly involving young boys. One man, a 64-year-old from Hamburg, Germany, was accused of producing and uploading more than 3,500 posts, and a host of others were arrested in Paraguay and across Germany. So child porn is a very, very, very large and lucrative marketplace on the dark web, and it is just absolutely beyond comprehension and vile. And then we go to the Red Room. So Red Rooms gets its name from Red Rum, like The Shining, like the movie The Shining, where it's murder spelled backwards. So think murder. It's by far the biggest urban legend on the dark web, and it works like a twisted version of a chat website. So if you listen to the graphic sexual horror episode, you remember me talking about how models would do a shoot, and then there would be a live chat room where people could pay to have certain things done. That's exactly what a Red Room is. Imagine insects, but they end up killing the model and allowing allowing a random person to quote unquote direct it based on how much they pay them. They do exist, and do not let any Reddit subreddit article or anyone else tell you otherwise. They 100% do exist. However, that being said, they may not exist in the way that the media portrays them to. By far the worst thing is the hurtcore sites. What I'm not quite understanding is that people say that Red Rooms don't exist. There's no proof of this existing. But hurtcore websites of the torture and raping of children for pay and live chats does exist. That's a Red Room. The only thing that would be different is if they murder them. And yes, we actually have seen that as well when it comes to children. So people often talk excitedly about finding Red Rooms online. Basically, it's like your hostel movie with webcams. But again, the reality is that torture streams or made-to-order torture usually involve children in unimaginable circumstances. One of the biggest cases of a Red Room, supposedly it was someone who posted it, and they sent out basically a ping across many different onions in the dark web. And it was, "We have ISIS hostages. Here's a countdown for 30 minutes. We're going to torture them to death. Take part in it." The clock counted down, and a bunch of people came to this room, and when the stream started, it was a person in a hood, and that was it. That was it. It was a hoax. There has been 000 proof of like a hostel-style Red Room, to my knowledge and understanding. Even Eileen Ormsby and other cybersecurity people say, no, there's no proof that just a straight-up Red Room exists. But in terms of snuff and stuff like that, yes, it exists via child pornography. And it's absolutely disgusting. What many scholars believe to be a double-edged sword of where technology and freedom of speech kind of intersect and meet. But here's the reality. The dark web will never be shut down, ever. I mean, look at how incompetent world governments are and how much they struggle with even keeping the Pirate Bay offline. I mean, it's impossible. And then there are all these other illegal streaming sites and things like that. They just change hosts and they're back up a week later after they go down or get kicked off. I mean, it's impossible. It's literally like trying to kill Hydra. Like anywhere in the world, there are some really fucked up people out there. And that's anywhere you go. And the government has been pretty successful in shuttering a lot of these large pedophile rings. Keep in mind, guys, that many people are in fact using the deep web for honest means. Like, again, protests, people who live under fascist regimes, things of that nature. One of the largest dark web forums is a network for abuse survivors. People who are in dangerous relationships, stalking situations, things like that. and they're looking for help and support, and they're afraid that, you know, they don't want their information found or for whatever means, or even just the literary magazines or the radical librarians. A lot of good is done as well. So it is a double-edged sword, and it's one that's very, very interesting, but it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. So what do you think? How do you feel about it? Hit me up and let me know. You can send me an email to info@wesawthedevil.com, and I would like to read some of your replies, because it's a very interesting concept to me. Unfiltered, unmodded, unregulated free speech on the internet. Likewise, you see a lot of darkness, and then likewise, you see a lot of freedom, artistic expression, and conversation. Will you be logging onto the dark web to explore it anytime soon, or are you like, hell no, I'm fine where I am? That's it for today, guys. Don't forget, Brittany will be joining me later this week, and we will have another Lori Vallow update. Then we're going to start on a couple of deep dives for the Vallow case. And yeah, a lot of cool stuff on the horizon. Don't forget, you can check us out at wesawthedevil.com, listen to episodes, find our socials, all of our links, send us emails, and also our Patreon. That's patreon.com/wesawthedevil, where for as little as $3 a month, you can support the show and get some cool bennies while doing it. While you're at it, titty slap that subscribe button so you can stay up to date with the latest show topics and awesomeness of We Saw the Devil. And beyond that, don't forget to leave a 5-star review. And with that, until next crime.